Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. This next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Pauline Halstead from Abilities in Motion. So tell me a little bit about Abilities in Motion.
Abilities in Motion came about when I was at college and I met a quadriplegic. I was already a kayaker, but in beginning stages. It just happened. The minute I saw her, I said, "Can you kayak?" She said, "Of course I can." And that lady happens to be Unstoppable Tracy, who now has worldwide notoriety. It went from there. I had this idea. Decided to take some kayaking lessons, bought 3 books, and figured out how to stop them tipping over. And it was just through experience over the years that I built up more and more people. I learned as I went, because there was no training at that time, and there's still very little. I think I'm the only one in Canada doing it with the training. So it just went from there. And in 2009, I decided to make it a non-profit organization, and it's grown from that point into 2 established locations, one with works with agreement, and we have charitable status now.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the modified equipment you use to make kayaking fully accessible?
In the beginning, all I used were boat fenders. They work very well now, very inexpensive. And then by chance, I was given a set of outriggers, which we actually still use. From that, we've gone to creating our own set of outriggers. We've purchased them from the state. Unfortunately, it's really expensive to get equipment from the state. We also have an adaptive seat, which is essential for some paddlers. It holds their body up and holds it straight if they have a broken back and can't hold themselves up. That comes from the States as well, and it's obviously really expensive with the exchange and shipping and import duties. So we're always looking for alternatives, always. But we do have one of those seats at each location.
So
apart from that, we have a paddle holder. But I think the number one thing that we have are trained volunteers and people who really care to help make this happen.
So what are some of the challenges in training someone with, say, a quadriplegic injury to actually take up kayaking?
They usually come to us. If they want to have freedom from using a wheelchair and they hear of us, they'll say, "I want to try that. So, sounds like freedom. Sounds like fun." We listen to them. I think that's the bottom line. They know their bodies better than we do. They will tell us. We'll show them what we have. We do know how to transfer, but they also can be communicating, and I think communication is the key. How do you feel? How do you feel this could be done better? So we have various ways of transferring from a chair to a kayak. But don't forget, we also take people with intellectual differences and people who are blind hearing impaired.
So, in your time with Abilities in Motion, what's been the greatest success you've witnessed?
The greatest success for me would be standing on the dock and seeing a group of people out there, 6, 7, 8 people, all equal, all kayaking. I know that there are 2 wheelchairs sitting on the dock. And one person has a guide because they cannot see. I think it's the biggest kick I've ever got is just watching it happen from afar and seeing people trained and able to do it and having fun at the same time.
So, in particular, with a visually impaired kayaker, how do you go about training such a person?
I wouldn't use the word train. We listen to them. So we would start until we know them in a tandem kayak, put them in the front. What we want them to do is get the feel of the water, the pressure of the paddle, the feel of the wind. And they are to build up a skill and almost be able to paddle forward on a still day with no help. And they create that extra sense that we don't have or we've lost. Prior to that, we may have someone behind saying left, right, and showing them, or put audible device on the kayak in front of them so they can follow that.
So, if you could send any message to the community about why this work is important, what would you say?
Health. Physical fitness is a huge component to physical and emotional health. We are a community, not they. We are an inclusive community. And everyone just gets along. It doesn't matter if they've had a car accident or they have an intellectual difference or they cannot see. We have a volunteer who cannot see. We have a job for her. There's always something to do for everyone. And I think that's the glory of it, is the community feeling that we have.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
This next segment of our show, we're going to hear from Kareem Ali, who's going to be telling us a little bit about the upcoming NCRA Abilities Handbook, second version. So, with the upcoming Abilities Handbook meeting, what do you hope is going to happen with the project?
Well, what I would hope is that the project, and not just the project, but the handbook as well, hopefully can get closer to finalization so that we can start working towards implementation and hopefully integrate it into, while the goal may be community and campus radio stations, I think the goal and what we can accomplish might be even higher and hopefully into the commercial level and potentially even upwards into the CRTC.
So you're familiar with the last handbook and the material covered in it. What would you like to see coming out of this new guide?
My goal with the new guide is using it as a tool to create more opportunities, not just understanding. The general ethos of the handbook so far has been more so geared towards helping to create a better understanding. But what I think people need to kind of shift their mindset into is that this is a tool that can create opportunities and hopefully change the mindset of a lot of people who may be, for lack of a better word, fearful to allow the creation of more job opportunities.
So, you've been involved with the Abilities Committee for about a year now. What was it that led you to want to be a part of that group?
That's a great question. Oddly enough, in grade 6, I was diagnosed with a learning disability. And I learned firsthand how detrimental that can be to a child's education. Moreover, how detrimental it can be leading into adulthood. I've been extremely fortunate to have accomplished what I have in life. And if there is something that I can do to eliminate the social construct and the biases that people have on people living with disability, then I almost feel like it's almost part of my onus and what I need to do to not just eliminate people's biases, but to help create job opportunities for people living with not just mental but physical disabilities, and just do everything that I can, because, you know, being assessed in grade 6 led me to being put into, you know, specialized classes. Going into high school, I was put into all essential classes, which, if you're unfamiliar, they have the essential, applied, and academic. And in order to get into, you know, college and university, you need to have a mixture of, you know, university classes and M classes, which is a mixture of college and university level. And had I not figured that out in my grade 9 year, I would have been heaven only knows where, because I was automatically grouped and automatically told, okay, you have a learning disability, therefore you are less than, so therefore we are going to group you and put you into the bare minimum of classes where, oh, by the way, we didn't tell you, you'll never be able to get into college, you'll never be able to get into university. As I got older and started to work in both commercial and community radio and television, I quickly saw that a lot of these companies were not just, you know, fearful of hiring and creating opportunities for people living with disabilities, but they almost created a system where it becomes downright near impossible for equal opportunities. So as soon as I found out about the Accessibility Committee and what it was that the committee does and what the committee stands for, I kind of knew that I had to be a part of it.
So how do you think kids in the education system, young people, veer away from those myths that you can only get to this level, that glass ceiling society likes to impose?
I think one thing that's lost on a lot of people today, especially as it relates to how we perceive and how we kind of push the next generation, is that it all comes down to socialization. Social conditioning is a instrumental part in the way that a child or a preteen or a teenager or even a young adult sees themselves. When we talk about, you know, socialization, we're talking about social institutions like our home, our house, our family, our educators, our teachers, our principals, even, you know, something as large as, you know, the police and how they treat and you know, they teach kids how to see themselves and how to perceive themselves. And I think it's one of those situations where from a young age you are taught what your capabilities are, what your capacities are. You know, I have two very young siblings. My brother and sister are 7 and 9. And something that I will never tell them is, no, you can't do that. Even if it's something as simple as rock climbing or teaching them, oh, no, you need to be afraid of heights. No, we don't do that, because what we're doing is we're teaching these kids that they are less than. So coming back to your question, I think it's a matter of starting from a young age and kind of pushing that, you know, just because you might be in a wheelchair or just because you may be dyslexic, that does not mean that you are incapable of achieving greatness. All we need to do is focus on what it is that you love, what is your passion, and that is where we can, you know, hone in on, oh, great, you know, you love, you love animals. Boom, let's get you into veterinary work. You love speaking on radio. You're fantastic at, you know, speaking in public. There is no reason you cannot have a successful career working on radio, or for that matter, television. But in order to get to that point, we definitely need to destroy and knock down a few barriers, because the reality is that society does have a number of cultural biases.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Office of Human Rights, Equity, and Accessibility is pleased to announce the 2019-2020 Innovative Designs for Accessibility Student Competition at UWindsor. The IDEA competition is designed to challenge our students to develop innovative, practical, and cost-effective solutions to address accessibility issues which affect people with disabilities. By participating in the IDEA competition, students gain valuable, hands-on learning experience and contribute to expanding the accessibility culture on campus and beyond. All UWindsor students are eligible to enter alone or as a group, and all entrants will make their pitch to the judging panel, where they will explain how their idea would eliminate a barrier to accessibility for a chance to win cash prizes up to $500. The competition closes on January 30th, 2020. Judging panel day is on February 10th, and for more information about the competition, you can go to uwindsor.ca/OHREA/idea competition or email idea@uwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Kareem Ali, who told us about the upcoming NCRA Abilities Handbook, and from Pauline Halstead from Abilities in Motion. In this segment of our show, we're going to hear a little bit about Autism Ontario. So, can you introduce yourselves for the audience?
Sure. I'll start. It's Margaret Spoolstra, and I'm the Executive Director of Autism Ontario.
And I'm Mike Knutty, Manager of Communications and Resource Development.
And can you tell me a little bit about the work of Autism Ontario?
Sure. So, since 1973, Autism Ontario has been supporting families who have children and adults and adult children on the autism spectrum, and we do that through 25 chapters across the province in most places. So we do that with a large volunteer service group, as well as paid staff who help us with particular programs that also support families.
So, can you tell me a little bit about some of the individual programs that you use to provide?
So our goal is really to create a supportive and inclusive Ontario for autism and for people who are autistic, and to support their families in that process. So we offer programs that align with making their lives better and giving families opportunities to support their children. So we do that through service navigation of the current Ontario Autism Program, as well as through what we call social learning opportunities, which are programs in the past few years. We've been able to offer 1,600 of those programs a year that parents have pitched to us about what they would like to see for their children in local communities. So that might mean an opportunity to learn specific social skills through a regular meeting. It might mean participating in a program in the community that allows their kids to swim with additional supports at a community pool. Or it might mean having a quieter night or a very open evening at a movie where it's specific to autistic kids and their families, so that they can actually enjoy movies together and support the unique noises that sometimes kids with autism make, or the need to get up and move around, which could sometimes be distracting to other folks. So different kinds of programs that help families to reduce their overall anxiety, not only for their children, but for themselves as a family, and that remove barriers from participating in the community. We also are offering right now a terrific March break program. So parents can apply on our website up in, I think until sometime mid-next week. I'm going to say January 21, but that's a program that allows families to apply through a randomized draw for up to $350 to either hire a worker during March break or to pay for a program that their child can attend so that the parents don't need to take time off necessarily from work. So these are important things. We're also involved in supporting adults very directly and are currently offering a program called Living Life to the Full, and that's in partnership with the Public Health Agency of Canada and the South Asian Autism Awareness Center, SAAC, that is helping adults understand and find ways to support themselves as they're struggling with mental health challenges and trying to work through that while they gain access to other employment or other opportunities in their communities. So these are some of the things that we're working on at the moment and pretty excited about.
So are there any challenges in providing supports to these individuals with autism?
Yeah, well, where to start? There are many challenges.
Yeah,
and Mike is here with me, too, and he can certainly speak to some of these kinds of challenges in what that's like for autistic folks and also what it means for the communities that we serve. And I'll start by just saying that some of the challenges are funding, but also some of those challenges are families consistently find themselves having to be the person who manages everything in their lives that helps their child to participate. I had there's a parent who was, I quote loosely, who talks about saying, it's not my child who's the challenge, but it's the barriers that we constantly face as a family in the acceptance of our child and allowing them to participate. And some of those barriers mean that families often have to deal with multiple ministries. They struggle even within their own families for people to understand their children and to find ways that they can participate. And sometimes they selectively choose to restrict those interactions. And we know that those are actually the very places where families need support. But when you find yourself more isolated, that can be really a challenge. So one of our challenges is to find ways to bring parents together. And we do that through our service navigation program. They also struggle at school, where there are insufficient resources in many of our school boards across the province for their children to be included and even to have their needs met on which are promised to them through the current legislation that we have in Ontario for educating students.
And if I might, Margaret, Cam, I mean, it doesn't get any easier for adults on the spectrum who face challenges getting employed, for example. The most recent studies from a 2012 survey on disability, StatsCan, show that only 14.3% of adults on the spectrum were employed, which is shocking. I mean, and this trickles down to other points of well-being as well. For example, I can cite two UK studies, 2018 and 2011, which come up with similar numbers on the numbers of people on the spectrum who are actually homeless. That comes to around between 12 and 13%. So those are the kind of it doesn't got any easier for adults on the spectrum. Those are continuing challenges. That's how we must continually find support for folks as they age up and out and work with them.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with Autism Ontario, have there been any successes that stand out?
Oh, absolutely. We know that the investments over multiple governments, there have been attempts made to create new programs. And so there are, I would say, we continue to make progress. Some of the real successes have been around identifying ways for families to actively participate in the program, some of the children's programs that have been offered, the opportunity with the new program, I would say the most recent success that is probably top of mind for most parents of children and youth with autism is the report that was released by the Ontario Autism Program Advisory Panel, really identifying a needs-based program that would also allow for not only access to applied behavior analysis, but also speech-language pathology, occupational therapy, and mental health supports. And although the government's recent response, which was very worrisome about the delay in implementing these programs, they did endorse the direction and those recommendations in the panel's report. So that is a really important new move forward. So I would say the sooner we can get that program implemented, the better. There's an implementation committee that's been struck, and that's good news. But we really need to be looking at implementing some of those pieces, including the early intervention program, those foundational supports for families immediately. And Autism Ontario is very pleased to already be part of some of that work as the government sifts through how to implement this program in a way that's equitable, not only for families who live in large urban areas like Toronto and Ottawa and Windsor, but also in more rural communities in the north and for our Indigenous populations and French-speaking families.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Not a problem.
I'm very pleased to see that Kareem is taking the Abilities Handbook so much to heart. Fact is, I was involved in the original project. The first handbook was sort of breaking new ground in so much as we wanted to create series of guidelines by which the radio sector could actually look at accessibility in a meaningful way, not just what we as society assume a person needs. No, we wanted to share experiences, philosophy, accessibility audits, everything that would recognize these are full individuals with the right to be involved in whatever field they so choose. Now, with Abilities in Motion, Pauline shared about visually impaired kayakers. It's just remarkable. At least, it is to us, I should say. In so much as, to us, we're looking in, we're saying, wow, that's amazing. A person with a vision impairment managed to do something that most of us in society would consider impossible. Maybe to them, they just like being out kayaking. Maybe they just are doing what comes naturally to them. I mean, yes, it is a remarkable thing, but a remarkable thing has to be born of someone's desire to achieve. Not necessarily to make their mark in this world. Not necessarily to make a public statement. That's a lovely side effect, mind you, but it's not so much about putting down a stake and saying, I want the world to take notice. They were probably just doing it because they want to be out there and experience the freedom, the joys of being on the water. Our friend Carrie Wright once wrote a letter describing what it's like to be a quadriplegic with total freedom being up in a glide plane. It's one of the most remarkable things I'd ever heard. But the fact is, for any person with a disability, they're just like anyone else in society, and that when they're exploring what they love to do, who they love to be, what they're passionate about, that is total freedom. It's called life, my friends. And life without the ability to express oneself in art and passion and music and media, whatever it is that drives us, it's not a full life. And just because of one thread woven differently to make for a disability does not change the fact that these are intelligent, capable people living to their fullest, creating to their fullest, doing more than we ever would have imagined. But once the precedent is set, we can't go back to the idea of impossibility. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.